You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's go around the NFL to keep you in the loop. This is Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right, so when we talk about the Houston Texans and we talk about the goals, John McClain, who you heard, you'll hear him this week, likely on Thursday, a week away from the Texans game against the Kansas City Chiefs. You hear this talk about get to the AFC Championship game. Get to the AFC Championship game. Texans have never been to the AFC Championship game. Let's get there. Every team in the division besides the Texans has been there. Let's get there. What does it really mean in the big scheme of things to get to an AFC Championship game? And I'm being dead serious because, John, you hear the term banners fly forever and flags fly forever. And when you win the whole damn thing, that's true. You can still hang your hat if you desire on the Astros winning the World Series in 2017. That flag flies forever. But that same year, the Jags made the AFC Championship game. And I don't quite hear Jags fans, I'm not hearing NFL fans say, you know what? At least they made that AFC Championship game in 2017, so it was all worth it. I'm not hearing that. I hear about what a train wreck the Jets are, how much of a disaster they are. They went to the AFC Championship game twice. I'm hearing the Titans heading into this season. They're talking about who cares if we made it to the AFC Championship game. Are we sure that just getting to the AFC Championship game is really enough for Texans fans to be satisfied?
I think it depends on the organization. And in this organization, I think the answer is yes. This city has not seen an AFC Championship game since 1979. And it was an entirely different organization. But beyond that, in the case of the Texans, I think it would matter to get there. It absolutely would matter. Now, clearly you want to win it and get to the Super Bowl, but I think it would matter to get there. And then the other thing that it would do is what I'm talking about. It would break that ceiling. You know, it would Bill O'Brien's ceiling all of a sudden would be higher. So then maybe you would be talking about a guy that is finally getting it done the right way here. So, yeah, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're not talking about getting to an AFC Championship game. They're well beyond that. You know, New England Patriots, I mean, hell, even the Raiders, and as bad as they've been lately, they're not talking about getting to any AFC title game. Their goals are well beyond that. But for this organization and this regime, this head coach, getting there would mean something.
We've gone through the list of teams that have been there, though, and I mean, it's a long-ass list of teams that have been there. I mean, okay, the Colts. They have one Super Bowl with Peyton Manning.
Mm-hmm.
Were the Colts hanging their hat Andrew Luck's final stretch before he ended up getting hurt on that?
No.
Like, so the Texans are below the Jags and the Colts?
I don't think you're understanding what I'm saying, and I'm not talking down to you. I'm just saying maybe I'm doing it wrong here. It would be all new. I mean,
if they just get smoked, if they just go to the AFC Championship game and they just get smoked, it's like, well, at least we got there. It's somewhere we've never been.
It's not just about what happens in that game. It's the fact that you're taking another step after you think this guy has reached his ceiling. I'm talking about more about Bill O'Brien than the city. And this city has never gone beyond the AFC Championship game. Ever. Ever. You know? No, I think, the Colts don't care about that. But I think for this team and this coach especially, it would mean something like, all right, you know, now we're showing you that we can get into that conversation as a title contender, and we showed it to you by getting to the championship game.
I just feel like in the NFL that the slate is wiped so clean, and that usually when you talk about taking steps, it's under the assumption that there's going to be another step taken and it's the next step. I just feel like in the NFL, just getting there, doesn't it almost seems like it can just be like That was the best taste we got. That was as good as it got for them. I feel like a lot of times you have an opportunity. I think the Texans last year had that opportunity that is hard to get when you're up 24-0 on the Chiefs. I just look at the Jags, and I look at them as an example of just getting to the AFC Championship should not be a lot, because a lot of times when you get there, it comes tumbling down, and next thing you know, you are the Jets or you are the Jags. So regardless of whether you've been there or not, in this league, it seems like you've got to win the whole damn thing to satisfy yourself. To me, like, if the Astros go to the World Series and lose, I know they did it with the White Sox early on, but mm-hmm. are we sitting here saying, well, that was great, that was awesome?
Yeah, until they get past that. That's my whole point. It's like, you know, the first – everybody remembers where they were and the feeling they had the first time the Texans ever made the playoffs. I can tell you exactly where I was. And, you know, it was an incredible environment. There were fans, Landry, outside the NRG Stadium waiting for the Texans players to come out and wave at them and talk a little bit. Well, now that's garbage. You know what I'm saying? It's reaching a different threshold every time. So after the Texans get to if the Texans get to an AFC Championship game, it's absolutely going to be meaningful to fans. But I think it's going to be more meaningful to fans in that they realize they got a coach that can get them there. But in the big picture, if they go again, it isn't going
to
mean as much.
It just seems like a created accomplishment to me, like getting to the AFC Championship.
Because, I mean,
well, I know it's never happened, but like when a team makes the Final Four or something, and you cut down the nets, that's a true event. But making it to the AFC Championship game, I've never heard a coach at the start of the season say, all right, we got to get to the AFC Championship game. I hear it all the time in college basketball.
No, it's not a goal.
I hear win the division, which I think is a tangible goal. We mock it, and in the big scheme of things, it doesn't mean anything. But that is typically what the coach lays out as the first goal. I've just never heard AFC Championship game.
Let me do what you've done. Let me answer your question with a question. Would you feel better about Bill O'Brien as a coach if they got to the AFC Championship game this year?
It would depend on the path. It would depend on the path. Last year, I think the path was laid out clearly. Quite honestly, there could be a situation.
Any path. Easy, hard, whatever.
There could be a situation where they lose in the second round, the divisional round again, and don't make it to the AFC Championship game, where I could sit here and I could say, okay, that's fine. I feel like there was progress was made.
I can't co-sign that.
I feel like when it comes to building a culture,
I cannot co-sign that.
When it comes to building a culture, I think the process and the progress isn't necessarily tangible unless you are winning the whole damn thing. In other words, the Texans, you could have said in 2016, well, they won a playoff game. Bill O'Brien won a playoff game. Okay, but they lost to Derek Carr. I mean, the Raiders were on there, had a third-string quarterback. So I don't necessarily think progress was made. I've seen the Texans lose to the Indianapolis Colts 21-7. I felt better about the future of that organization and the direction than I did when they won a playoff game against the Raiders, where you can say, well, they actually won the playoff game. Well, they beat a team that had their third-string quarterback, and they didn't have a quarterback of the future of their own. The Texans, when they lost to the Colts, they at least had Deshaun Watson, and I felt they were a better team than that squad. I just don't think I can look at it tangibly and say, if you get to the AFC Championship game, then that's tangible progress. I got to see how it happens.
I just don't agree. I mean, you know, I think this city will go nuts if they get there. Certainly disappointment if they don't get past it, of course. You want to get to a Super Bowl. The city will go nuts if they get there, but I think more important than this city going nuts, much more important than that, is you would see something from Bill O'Brien that you haven't seen before, and that's all I keep going back to. I get your point. Yeah, you know, you want more than that. Of course you would want more than that, but he would show you that he could get it done. Easy path, difficult path, I don't care. Because he's had easy paths and not gotten past the divisional round. He's had difficult paths and not gotten past the divisional round. I just want to see progress. Certainly, within the next 3-5 years, whatever, you would hope that getting to a conference championship game wouldn't mean nearly as much. But for now, it would mean a lot because he could show you that he could get it done.
It's it, It would show you that, but what does it really mean in the big scheme of thing just getting there? I just
told you the big scheme of thing, Landry, is that the guy can get you there. But he's a coach.
I'm not talking about
that means they're a championship organization. No, they would not be. What I'm saying is all these frustrations with Bill O'Brien would at least be appeased in the fact that he's taken a further step and he showed that he could. In big scheme of things, like, look, I'm not going to say, hey, yippee, let's throw a parade. No, that's what I'm saying. It would mean a lot to fans. It would be important for fans, and then they'd be heartbroken if they didn't get to a Super Bowl. But I think more important than that, much more important than that, you know, you got a dude. You got a dude that can get you there. At least he would show you a sign. Right now, I don't know if we have that guy. I think that would show you that you do have that guy.
Chuck Pagano was there 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Rex Ryan was there twice in the last 11 years or whatever it is. Doug Marrone was in there 3 years ago. I just don't know that just getting there shows you that that they're staying power. It's tangible. I get it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's laid out and it's something that you've never done before. Maybe the bar's just so low. I think you have to win the damn thing.
It could absolutely be fool's gold. It could absolutely be Doug Marrone. I thought we were getting somewhere, but we weren't. But what I'm saying is at least you would see something. Look how Marrone's played it out.
And you don't think you could see – I guess the thing is you don't think you could see more without going as far. Like, what if they run into the – a buzzsaw? What if they just run into a buzzsaw of Chiefs-Ravens and they're just not as good?
I don't care. You should be Chiefs and Ravens after all these years. And I keep going back to that. You build a program, you know, if you're a new head coach in the NFL. It shouldn't be 6 years, 7 years. That program should not be 7 years. So if they run into a buzzsaw after year seven, then I know that you're not the guy. I know that you are not the guy. That's why they have to get to a championship game.
Still necessarily say that Bill O'Brien's the guy if they get to a championship game, I guess is what I'm saying. Yeah, you're just laying out expectations. You're not saying, like, if Bill O'Brien gets to the AFC championship, that right there is the guy right there.
Well, no, but what I will know is that he's taken another step, which is what I've been saying, that maybe – you know, his plan is working. Because what did I say when we were talking about kicking the can down the road? Within 2 years, you're going to be a very happy fan if you're a Texans fan, because either Bill O'Brien's going to get it done or he's going to be out. If he shows that he can get there, I think he's going to be showing that maybe he can get it done.
First four games on the Texans schedule, Landry Locker, John Lopez going around the NFL. They got the Chiefs and the Ravens. Then they got the Steelers. And then they got the Minnesota Vikings, which means Yannick Ngakoue, who the Jags just traded, a member of that 2017 AFC Championship team. Texans don't have to face him twice, but they will face him week four with the Minnesota Vikings. This is going to be a very, very tough start for the Texans. The four teams that they face combined 44-20 record.
That's a tough start right there. Man, people are just sleeping on the Vikings as a contender, right? Or are they?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, for sure. I don't think very many people are considering them a contender. They do have Gary Kubiak calling plays. He was an offensive advisor. He is calling plays. We know Gary can do that. Let's see if he's still got it. Kirk Cousins, out there, they lost Stephon Diggs, still got Dalvin Cook. Be interesting to see how Kubiak calls plays. Boy, this is like heaven for Mark Berman these weeks. You got the Chiefs build up. Do you still have a sour taste in your mouth after losing 24-0? Then you got the Ravens. Deshaun, talk about what it's like to
talk
be compared
about.
By Lamar Jackson. You're going to have that. Then you're going to have the Steelers. JJ, how crazy has it been talking to your two brothers a little trash talk leading up to this game? Did you ever think you would get to this moment where you guys would all be on the same NFL field? And then, of course, the obvious, the Gary Kubiak angle, where Gary Kubiak's coming back.
Gary Kubiak and Dom Capers. All three coaches in the history of the organization will be in the same building.
Will they take a picture together?
Will they?
I think Gary Kubiak.
They should, right?
I think Gary Kubiak and Bill O'Brien after the game. I know they said no jersey swap. I think they should do a polo swap. Yeah. Shirtless, too.
What about Dom
Bill
Capers?
O'Brien and Gary
on the
Kubiak.
Staff.
Kubiak gives his Vikings shirt. I don't know. Where does Dom Capers fit into this? Him and Romeo can switch. They can all go shirtless. They can go polo shirtless. Dom Capers gives his shirt to Romeo. Romeo takes his.
They have to take a picture,
G-O-B
right?
And Kubiak. I don't know. You want that picture?
They probably won't. I'm just thinking it'll be kind of cool.
All in the same building. Kubiak and B.O.B. ever really spoken on each other?
Not that I recall. I mean, I don't think there's any animosity. Kubiak knew, you know, hey, it was a tough year, and he got replaced. But I don't think it has anything to do with Bill O'Brien.
It's Around the NFL here on Reaction Monday in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Trade deadline in MLB is upon us. It's been a memorable time for the Astros in recent years. We're going to revisit the most entertaining, polarizing sounds from trade deadlines past, as well as count down the five biggest All-Stars. And we're also going to tell you why it's been a good trade deadline for the Astros today, despite the fact they haven't done a damn thing. That's next.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Astros usually active during the trade deadline, at least during this era of Astros baseball, but they've been quiet. Teams in the division, the Rangers, the Mariners, are unloading their teams, and the Astros are in firm control of that second spot in the AL West, which will get you into the dance. The last few years, though, J-Lo, going back to 2017, whether it's the first trade deadline, whether it's the second trade deadline, whether you see it coming, whether you don't see it coming, whether you're disappointed, whether you're anxious, it has been one of the most active, most relevant times in these parts when it comes to a team competing for a championship.
And you can go back even further. You can go back and the Astros have always been a big-time, like traditionally have been a big-time trade deadline organization. Randy Johnson.
Randy.
You know, was one. I think what they're doing right now, obviously the Astros are listening to offers, maybe even making a few offers, trying to figure out, kick the tires on some players or whatever. I think they just feel good about the guys that they have and that are coming back and how they're playing right now. I think, Kyle Tucker is living up to expectations. They're just going to ride it out pretty much with what they have right now.
Let's go through, though, just this, Eric, because obviously the Randy Johnson is the one move that was made that just shook up the entire baseball world. I mean, that was one of the crazier moves that we've seen, one of the most productive moves that we've seen in Astros history. But let's just go through this era of Astros baseball, the Jeff Luhnow era / Dusty Baker / James Click era, I guess we can say. Let's go through the most prominent figures, starting with number five, the fifth most prominent figure for the Astros deadline activity in the last few years.
Number five.
Jeff Luhnow. Mm-hmm. I know Jeff Luhnow could be higher up on this list, but I put Jeff Luhnow at number five. He's made some big ones. He made the Verlander trade in 2017. He made the Roberto Osuna deal in 2018, 2019. He traded for Zach Greinke when we didn't see it coming. Jeff Luhnow, one of those prominent figures. Here is Luhnow talking about, I guess, the final splash he made as general manager of the Astros. The Astros trading for Zach Greinke. Yeah. Jeff Luhnow talking about the mindset of the final big splash he would make on this day.
I can't believe we just added Zach Greinke to this rotation and this team. I mean, probably the same reaction. I mean, because I wasn't sure it was going to happen. And throughout the afternoon, there was times I thought it was dead and times I thought it was 50-50. But at no point did I think it was over 50-50. And then when it all came together, we just looked at each other in the room and said, is this really happening?
That was a big one. That was pretty dang shocking, man. There's no question about that. I want to know who your top four guys are, because Luhnow's moments or whatever, because Luhnow is those three deals alone.
Before we go into the top four, let's hear from Luhnow one more time about the Zach Greinke move, because I think it kind of shows the mindset that Luhnow's had the last three trade deadlines. This is Jeff Luhnow using those two words that a lot of people want to hear around this time: all in.
You just don't know when you're going to assemble a group this talented again, and so you have to take advantage of that, and that's something that Jim believes in, and so do I. At the same time, we don't want to be looking around in 2022 and looking up at the rest of the division and wishing we had kept some of our elite young talent. So it's a balancing act. We've tried to do as best we can, but we are definitely going for it this year.
Well, the good news there is, with the way the Rangers and Mariners are acting, you might not have to look up at 2022. They ain't trying to win.
Now, to be fair, the Astros farm system has been gutted. They've gone from having one of the strongest, if not the strongest, to having given up a lot here. Now they're in a bind. They're talking about win now. They're in a win now mode as well.
Prominent figure number four. And hear me out. When I say prominent figure, mm-hmm. I'm just talking about the internet going nuts. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the reaction. I'm talking about content. I'm talking about the dialogue around the country. Jeff Luhnow, obviously, he's the one who orchestrated these. But prominent figure number four of recent Stroh's deadline deals, Roberto Osuna. Do you remember the outrage when the Astros traded for Roberto Osuna?
I was part of it. I do remember the outrage for Osuna. But that, I mean, you know what? They went in with eyes wide open. They knew exactly, you know, what the situation was. They knew that they were going to have repercussions from making that deal, and they did.
I kind of feel like that's when baseball started hating the Astros.
I
kind of do feel like that was where people around baseball started hating the Astros. I feel like there was somewhat of a respect for the Astros, even though they did tank. But I feel like this moment, this move, was the moment where people started hating the Astros. Here is Roberto Osuna himself talking about the second chance he was given by the organization.
There are some people that question whether you should have gotten another chance. What do you say to those people?
Cada quien piensa lo que quiere. Yo soy de las personas que todas las personas merecen una segunda oportunidad.
You know, everyone has the right to their thoughts, and I believe, you know, everyone has the right to also have a second opportunity.
Pretty crazy. Osuna couldn't speak English back then.
Yeah, but then he did.
And he kind of did after that.
Then he did.
After it died down a little bit, he did.
Yeah.
Here was A.J. Hinch talking about bringing Roberto Osuna into a winning culture and a very likable culture like the Astros.
You know, we don't know Osuna as well as we know our own team. And we take it very seriously who comes into our culture, who comes into our clubhouse, and how the clubhouse responds. So I addressed the team to let them know that Jeff and Osuna will both be in LA, and we're gonna get together as a family would and talk about how this all came together and what the steps are moving forward to incorporate him onto our team and give him a second chance.
I thought when I heard Altuve talking about this is where it kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit. Jose Altuve talking about figure number four, Roberto Osuna, and the trade that the Astros made.
Sometimes when things like that happen, you are so focused on the game that you don't pay attention. But now he's one of our teammates, so now you have to be, you know, paying attention of the details. So he's going to be here, you know, anytime soon. I don't know when. And after that happens, you know, we're all going to find out what happened. And we're a team, so everything we do, we're going to be in the same place.
Do you have any concerns about how he'll be integrated or welcomed into this clubhouse?
Well, that's a tough question. You know, we all know that this conversation is a little harder for me, and I think it's okay if I don't know what to say, because like I said, I can say yes or not because I don't know what happened. So it's really hard to say something about something that you don't know what's going on.
Keep in mind,
you notice he stopped himself from saying one of us. He said one of teammates.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, there was some pushback on this in that clubhouse. People tend to forget that now, but there were guys who did not want Osuna in that clubhouse. Wasn't there also like a meeting in AJ's office or something about it and before one game? I forget the details, but nah, man, it's that was a moment.
Prominent figure number three in the deadlines of the past for the
Numero
Houston Astros,
tres.
Jim Crane. I know Jeff Luhnow made the moves, but when you trade for Zach Greinke and you trade for Justin Verlander, every GM in the league, most of them, would be willing to make that move. Mm-hmm. But not every owner in the league would be willing to write the check.
Right.
So the reason Jim Crane is on the list ahead of Luhnow is for that very reason. Here is Jim Crane after the Astros got the job done talking about the first move in this three-year span, bringing in Justin Verlander.
We were lucky to get him when he came in. You know, everybody was a little down with this big storm. He came in and, you know, gave us a lift then. And, you know, today he pitched a great game. Pitched great since he's got here. He's fired up. And he came out and said, thanks for getting me here.
I mean, you're right. I mean, he's been the best owner in professional sports in this city pretty much since he got here, even though I know they were tanking 300 lost years, et cetera, but he committed to that, too. You know, he just got the Astros. He's in debt, you know, because he bought the Astros, and they're committed to just losing, you know, to tanking. That takes a big commitment from the owner as well.
And he was always willing to give the credit to Jeff Luhnow. Here's Jim Crane talking about Jeff Luhnow after the Astros made the move they did for Justin Verlander 3 years ago today, and the credibility that it brought to the former GM of the Astros.
I think it gives it a lot of credibility. I mean, for a while there, it took some stamina to stick with it. We stood behind him. He's executed, you know, very well on building and developing this team and the depth in the team. You can see it. And, he, you know, it's hard to get every move right, but he makes a lot of the right moves.
There you go. So we have the first three, Jeff Luhnow, Roberto Osuna, Jim Crane. We'll give you the final two as the deadline approaches. Hell, we might even break some news about a trade.
Might as well. There have been a couple of trades, none involving the Astros.
None involving the Astros, but they have benefited the Astros indirectly. We'll give you the latest there. We'll talk about the Rockets one game away from facing the King, and we'll also talk about the Texans 10 days away from facing the Chiefs. Finishing strong next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, so Jeff Luhnow's five, Roberto Osuna's four, Jim Crane three when it comes to most prominent figures in the Astros trade deadlines in the recent few years. Number two.
Numero dos.
No longer with us. He's not dead. Dallas Keuchel is the number two most prominent figure of the recent deadlines from the past of the Astros. The money quote, July, the end of July, the first trade deadline had come and gone in 2017. Astros don't make a move. Had it not been for this, might not even ever have gotten a World Series here in the first place.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, disappointment is a little bit of an understatement. Us just kind of staying pat was really disappointing to myself. I know a lot of the guys feel like we can win in here, and I think when it comes down to it, it's going to be we're going to win for each other, and that's it.
I mean, you nailed it. Dallas Keuchel has just been. I hope he will never be forgotten because of his contributions on the field, on the mound. But I hope it's never forgotten the role he played in getting that acquisition. I'm convinced. Sure, he could have gone and knocked on the door of Jeff Luhnow and AJ Hinch, said, "Man, we got to do something. What are you talking about? Why did we stand pat?" But the fact that he did it so publicly really, really put the screws on, you know, and to make sure they did get something done.
Numero uno.
Which brings us to number one, Justin Verlander. He's always going to be the guy that got the Astros over the top. You just said yourself, you're not sure that deal happens without Dallas Keuchel.
Yeah.
Let's hear from Justin Verlander himself after the Astros won the World Series. The number one most prominent figure from deadlines of the past for the Astros, Justin Verlander, talking about that very thing that J-Lo just laid out.
You know, I was in the middle of a whirlwind night, and to have him reach out, and I've actually apologized to him since. I was pretty quick off the phone because I told him, I said, "Dallas, I thank you so much for the phone call, but I've got a lot of other calls I need to make right now and talk to my family and stuff." And he completely understood. He said, "But before you go," he said, "just one last thing." He goes, "You won't regret this decision if you decide to join Houston Astros." And that kind of resonated with me, and that stuck with me. And he was the first, one of the first calls I made after I made the deal and waived my no-trade clause and agreed to come here. I called him and let him know that I was coming to join the Astros and that his call meant a lot to me.
Wasn't it in the last 5 minutes?
Dallas not only called him out for not making the move, he makes the call to Verlander and says, "Hey, look.
He was an intermediary.
I know that there was just a hurricane there and you don't know if you want to move your family there, but you won't regret it. I promise.
He was integral. I mean, they might not have won the World Series without Dallas Keuchel's off-field influence on this squad. It's pretty incredible, man.
Impressive. Yeah. Deadline quiet for the Astros. Mike Minor traded from the Rangers to the A's, which is good news, bad news. The A's get a lefty for that staff. The Rangers, who are 6.5 behind the Astros with 27 remaining for second place, kind of tanking at this point. They're trying to trade Lance Lynn as well as the trade deadline approaches. Clinton Show will have you covered with that. And then the Mariners have already unloaded, continue to stockpile young guys. So if the Astros don't hold on to second place in the AL West.
Oh, it'd be a shocker.
It would be a shock. I can guarantee you that's not going to happen. So the deadline's been good to them because the two teams that could potentially chase them have shown that they don't really have interest in winning. It's not in the best interest for them to win.
Well, I mean, not right now anyway. But so the Astros are in. What is getting interesting is the A's have made a move. Some of the other teams in, I think, Toronto made a move. Some others have made some already. I think the Astros right now, what they really need is Dallas Keuchel to get on those phones and start working on some deals. No, I think the Astros feel pretty good about just where they are right now with this roster, with this squad, getting some guys healthy. There's not a whole lot. Like, where is the need right now? If you're playing general manager, looking at the Astros depth chart, where do you say, okay, we need some help right there? What would it be? Obviously, pitching is always coming
maybe
up.
Maybe another pitcher, but yeah. The pitching's been good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the pitching's been pretty good. So, I mean, we've been spoiled here. I don't even know if I know what need a pitcher means anymore because last year you had Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, and Greinke. Year before that, you had Cole and Verlander. Year before that, you had Keuchel and Verlander. Like, I don't even know what needing pitching is. Maybe this is just a little bit more normal than I've been used to. Maybe I'm just a little bit spoiled.
Whatever happened with Justin Verlander throwing? What's happened since then?
He threw some pitches.
Wasn't that like 4 or 5 days ago now?
Yeah.
So then what?
Maybe he's resting. Maybe there was an intense 20
pitches.
Why
haven't we gotten another update?
Well, they've been off 5 or 6 days, so that you don't get that pre-clubhouse availability.
Yeah.
And Mark Berman's been known to ask the question. Mark Berman hadn't had an opportunity 5 of the last 6 days. So that might have something to do with where the update
could
is.
Could be, but I'd be interested to see if it was a setback, if there's nothing to see here, if he's confident that he might come back, because that would be your biggest acquisition if you can get Verlander back.
Clint and Ron will have you covered when the trade deadline approaches. Texans, over the weekend, they made a move. They signed Zach Cunningham to a 4-year extension, 4 years, $58 million. Bill O'Brien, happy to have Cunningham back, but he wants to make one thing clear when it comes to who deserves the credit for this contract being signed.
To be very, very honest with you, Jack used to be did a lot of this negotiation. You know, I'm coaching the football team. We have a very unique model. I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it again, and I don't mind saying it. Jack and I work together. We're all in charge of different things. So relative to how a general manager's position has been defined in the past may not be exactly the way we do it. That makes sense. You know, I coach and I work with Jack, and he works extremely hard with the things that he's in charge of. He oversees a lot of different things, from medical to training. He works on contracts with Kevin, and you know, we work together. It's a team, and hopefully we can win and prove that that's the way to do it.
It's almost to the point where if someone rolls their ankle, I can blame Jack Easterby.
Everything is Jack Easterby.
If someone gets food poisoning, I can blame Jack Easterby.
Yeah. If you can't find
the PA's not loud enough, Easterby.
If you can't find a parking spot, you can blame Jack Easterby.
I mean, good Lord. Stuff do you need to do, man?
He does it all. He's multifaceted.
Is this really, like, a lot of times there are, like, revolutionary things that happen. This is really just a de facto GM and a coach, and the de facto GM is, like, to quote John Lopez, sitting right by me, kind of like an I got this guy on steroids.
You know, it's funny because there have been a number of NFL teams, there still are, where there is a general manager in name, but really the head coach is calling all the shots. The Texans are truly turning this in. Bill O'Brien willingly, openly, right there, turning this into a two-headed monster. I mean, saying, Easterby's doing all the heavy lifting on these deals. Whereas it is unprecedented. It is asking a lot of these two guys, especially Easterby, coming out of nowhere. Now, there isn't a person in Houston that 2.5 years ago would have, if you'd have said, what do you think of Jack Easterby, they would have said, what? Who? And now he's like the most powerful man in charge out there, not named Bill O'Brien.
It's two guys Bill O'Brien has been praising nonstop this offseason. Jack Easterby and Nick Martin. Nick Martin, because he took a blocking sled to his house, which is impressive.
It's impressive.
I'm not trying to take anything away from Nick Martin. Did you see Dak Prescott built a 55-yard football field in his backyard?
And he doesn't even have a new contract yet.
He's still on that rookie deal, isn't he?
How much does a 55-yard football field cost?
JJ thinks that one's cute. Doesn't he have like an 80-yard field up in Wisconsin? I think it's 80 or maybe a full-size field. JJ was working on it during this break as well.
Tire flip, JJ.
Mm-hmm.
That was the worst. I'm so glad he's moved past that. Elsewhere in Jacksonville, a team that's been to the AFC Championship during the Bill O'Brien era, 2017, they continue to unload guys. Yannick Ngakoue traded to the Minnesota Vikings for a second in a comp fifth pick. Leonard Fournette released this morning. They already traded Jalen Ramsey last year. Blake Bortles no longer there. Nick Foles traded this offseason after a one-year experiment. Doug Marrone had to face the media types and explain himself for his most recent trade. Here is Bill O'Brien's best buddy, Doug Marrone, talking about the status of the Jacksonville Jaguars following the release of Leonard Fournette.
Tad told me I'm not allowed to have an opening statement because you guys are chomping at the bit. So Tad reminds me of like the brother on the movie Weird Science. I'm just going to show my age. Wow. You probably never even seen the film. You seen the movie Weird Science? Yes or no?
Thumbs no, up. I have not seen the movie.
See, it must be an age thing, you know?
The link for the book and movie club will go out this afternoon, guys, but we'll go ahead and get started with the press conference here.
Yeah, Doug, why trade Leonard Fournette 2 weeks before, or why dump Leonard Fournette 2 weeks before the season opener?
Well, I think, you know, what happened was is I tried to challenge everyone, coaches, scouts, that we were going to have to make good decisions on what's best for the team, and let's not go ahead and say, well, because someone did something before, maybe we'll get the same type of results, or we exhausted, you know, all trade opportunities. We weren't able to get anything there. So I just felt that, you know, now we can, you know, work on the team and the plan and get ourselves ready for the season.
They've got to be tanking in 2019 or 2020. I mean, how can you just address that, please?
You know, if that's the case, then, you know, the realization is if that happens, then, you know, I'm not going to be here.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it.
Yeah. No problem.
I'm just trying to get a clarification. So you feel that from what you have right now as a young oriented team, particularly with your running back room, that you felt that he didn't fit for what you're looking for this season as a team, as far as what you, I mean, what do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? I felt like I did what's best for the team.
Right.
I just feel like the skill set of the guys that we have being used the right way will be able to give us more production and give us a better opportunity to win games. That's exactly what I feel and exactly what I've seen on tape.
You said that you pretty much exhausted your trade opportunities. Like you guys wouldn't have considered a seventh round pick that you'd trade him?
I mean, that's a question that, you know, obviously Dave can answer more involved in. My question was, you know, can we get any value? And it was we couldn't get any. So I fifth, sixth, no, we couldn't get anything.
Man. Does it say more about Leonard Fournette or more about the Jaguars that they couldn't get anything for him? Is it more about Leonard Fournette not people looking at his film and saying, you know what, he is a one-trick pony, and he doesn't have, you know, the elusiveness. He doesn't have that burst out of, you know, that quick early burst. Or does it say more about the Jaguars that, you know, they were strapped with a $4 million price tag and, you know, everybody knew they weren't he was going to be on the market? You know, I think it's Leonard Fournette is not the running back people thought he was coming out of college. And I am dead wrong. I thought he was going to be a beast. I thought he was going to be Derrick Henry-like.
I think it's more about just the running back position as a whole. Like, the teams don't want to invest in running backs. You run them into the ground early on, and then you just don't invest in them.
But he hadn't even been around that long, you know? It's not as if he's been – I mean, he's been used, but it's not like he's been – doing this for 4 or 5 years with 1,000-yard seasons, you know?
There's a lot of destinations possible for Leonard Fournette. He could end up being in Tampa Bay with Tom Brady and company. I think Tennessee would be a good spot for him where they could ease the load of Derrick Henry and he wouldn't get as many carries, get to stay in the Southeast. Pittsburgh is a team that comes up.
I think that's a possibility.
But the thing is, if these teams really wanted him, and I think this is something to keep in mind, Yeah, maybe they didn't want
to. They would have made some sort of
like
deal.
Like a sixth round pick, a seventh round pick. Like if they really wanted him that bad, don't you think they would have just done that?
Right, that's what I'm saying. So does it mean more, say more about Leonard Fournette and his skill set, or the fact that maybe the Jaguars mishandled it and it wasn't a good deal for anyone?
Maybe his mindset too.
Yeah.
That's another thing to keep an eye on. What is his mindset going to be as he looks for that deal? It's crazy. Just look at the Jags. They are completely falling apart at the end. And now there's conspiracy theories going on that Dabo Sweeney and Trevor Lawrence could be in Jacksonville in 2021. That's all part of a master plan.
Well, Trevor Lawrence could be. We'll see about Dabo. I don't think so, but it's a good, in a sense, it's a good thing to be a Jaguars fan when you have all these picks and you know we're not going to win the division anyway. So go ahead. You got potential 7 rookie starters this year. You have 10 picks next year. The problem is the guy who's drafting those guys is the same one that couldn't get a first round pick right no matter what since 2011. Since 2011, they haven't had a single first round pick that they could keep around. There's none left.
Now that's kicking the can.
That's kicking the can.
Which you think is going to die in 2 years with Bill O'Brien. You think the Bill O'Brien kicking the can theory is no longer with us.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that we established today, and I tried to make clear. I think Texans fans are going to be very happy within 2 years, one way or another. One way or another, Texans fans will be happy. By the way, we had our fantasy football. I got back into fantasy football this year.
This is
can
so
I just
ridiculous.
Go on a can
this
I just
is,
go on a rant
this
here?
This is so ridiculous. This
it's
is
not
so
ridiculous.
I apologize to everybody in advance for this.
I do not apologize for this opinion. Fantasy football in 2020, a monkey could win a championship. It is so easy to be a fantasy football owner. And you want to call me old man on the porch? Go right ahead. Back in the 80s, the first fantasy football league I ever joined was in 1987. I remember it very vividly because I drafted Jerry Rice and won a bunch after that because of Jerry Rice. But when I used to get ready for a fantasy football draft, I actually used to go to the library to look at other cities' newspapers to see who's doing what and how are the injuries and, you know, and are there any young players that are being thought of? You know, I used to obviously pour through magazines and use my own connections and calls and stuff. And hey, how's so and so looking? And then you had to go through the newspaper every week to find out. You had your own sleeper list. You had your own draft board. You wrote it all out.
So what place are you going to finish in?
You wrote it all out longhand. You know what they do now? I hadn't been in a few years. We went on ESPN. There, I could have gotten onto that draft and drafted a kick-ass team with zero knowledge at all. It tells you who's the ranked next, what position group, where you need to slot in, how many of this you need, you know, when they're playing even, what days they're play, what day weeks they're off, who should be the best flex position. You can be a total idiot and win a championship in fantasy football these days. Whereas back in the day, you actually had to do the work. Fantasy football, I'm all in. I'm excited. I'm happy to be doing it, and I'm excited to be doing it. But a caveman could do it.
I predict you don't make the playoffs.
Oh, I'm dominant. I'm going to be dominant.
This is all it took for you.
No, because I'm smart. I mean, when it comes to stuff like that. But you don't have to be smart. Anybody could be a contender. Just go click, click, click. Oh, that's where they want me to draft? I guess I'll draft that. You don't even have to use your brain.
We stick our picks. We don't do the whole auto draft thing. So
No. Auto draft. I didn't even mention auto. I'm saying you can log on to ESPN and it's right there.
Our lists. It's very handy.
We did it all longhand.
But sometimes,
Cowboy.
Sometimes more resources ain't enough though.
Get out of here.
Sometimes more resources can.
You
be,
know how easy it is to negative. Do now compared to the past.
Sometimes it can be a negative.
Man.
Sometimes you rely too much on it.
Fantasy football.
Sometimes
now.
You rely too much on it.
Get out of here.
It's the OG John Lopez.
At least you have something to rely on.
Cocky ass John Lopez doing what he do. We are 10 days away from Texans versus Chiefs. Trade deadline for the MLB is going to happen with Clint and Ron, so they'll keep you updated on that. And, of course, Rockets tonight, one win away from facing LeBron James. For the OG John Lopez, the cocky one. For Figgy Fig being the best in the world at what he do. Thanks to Sean Pendergast for hopping on. We'll talk to you tomorrow We will be single-digit days away from the Texans. We'll react to the deadline. We'll react to the Rockets as well. We'll talk to you tomorrow. But in the meantime, Clint and Ron are next.
There you stood. Everybody watched you play.
Thank you, Figgy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.